This hour, we'll take your calls with John Rhodes, the crypto hunter. Lots more to talk with him about as well as we talk about some of his work in the area of reptilians and underground bases and much more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, George Norrie, along with John Rhodes. John, where do you think the reptilians are coming from?
Where they originate, I believe, is their branch off the reptilian species here on Earth, and that they diversified and changed, morphologically changed over time into the form that they have now. You know, a paleontologist by the name of Dale Russell a number of years ago for the Canadian Museum in Ottawa had done a study with a colleague, his name by Ron Seguin, and they said that if you took the dinosaur bones of Truodon, which was an upright dinosaur, and you had allowed it to evolve without being destroyed with what killed the other dinosaurs 65 million years ago, they would have changed shape over time to eventually look more humanoid and upright and look and have the appearance that we do, saving their reptilian physiology, no hair, large eyes with a vertical slit pupil, three fingers with an opposable thumb, the large arms and mm-hmm. legs, muscular. And that to me says that there's something out there. You know, Dale Russell's work and the idea of intelligent dinosaurs has even been tossed around in fellow colloquium meetings, which are the scientific meetings at Los Alamos, when they talk about what extraterrestrial life could look like. So it's not just the people out here, the ordinary Joe who's on the internet going, oh, reptilians, oh, cool, they're just, you know, they're the leaders of the world. No, this isn't just crazy talk. This is behind the scenes, serious scientific discussion that tends to lend more scientific credibility to the subject. It's just a matter of us getting bored with all this fear and all this nonsense and all these accusations of shape-shifting and all this other kind of collateral discussion, this peripheral discussion, to let it settle down before people realize that, hey, we know the Navy and the U.S. government now is saying that there's craft that aren't ours and that could not be designed by foreign governments. So once they open up that ship, unless it's a drone itself, we're going to see something come out. And if it's got, if it looks like a mammal, a lot of people are going to be feeling happy. But if it's got scaled skin or anything reptilian, they're going to revert back to their primordial religious beliefs and reactions, and that will be negative. And that doesn't give us a good start on some sort of relationship with something we might be having contact with. So we have to really kind of control ourselves and look at what the possibilities are about what's about to happen. Remember, it's like the dragons of the apocalypse, you know, they come out of the skies, they visited mankind before, they'll be back again.
What do you think of the hollow earth theory, John?
You know, I've never quite understood the solid earth theory because, first of all, they talk about the magnetic field coming from an iron core, but from what I know about magnets, when you expose them to heat, they lose their magnetism. And I think that we've seen things in normal geology, such as geodes, form in which there are hollow spaces inside it. And it's entirely possible that, you know, we could have not only a huge amount of space that's occupiable under the surface in regular tunnel systems and cavern systems, but there might be actually large, massive underground areas which are probably indiscernible from being on the surface if you can't see the sky. And if they're vast enough to have a horizon, then you wouldn't even know that you're underground. So it's possible. You know, we have so many legends all around the world talking about, you know, that the interior earth of the earth is occupied by intelligent, spiritual, and physical beings. And I think that we need to kind of embrace that philosophy, and then come to terms with it and recognize that, hey, if we have aliens and we live under America, you know, we got to think of them as American aliens or what? You know, are they Americans because they live within our borders, but they're underground? So we have to think in terms of that in the future.
Are any of these ETs or humanoids or reptoids a threat to us?
I wouldn't believe that they are unless provoked. I think that an individual one-on-one basis, if they smell fear, it might smell indiscernible from aggression. So they might react like an animal would when it doesn't know you're scared. It says, like, you know, the saying, don't let them see you're scared, you know, because they'll feed off that. Wild animals will feed off that. So you don't. But it's because it's pheromonal. It'll excrete from your pores. Your fear will excrete from your pores, and animals with sensitive noses will pick that stuff up. I think that if provoked, they would be aggressive. I think that they are. You might encounter something like a fake charge, like some of the great apes might do in order to scare you away, or like a Bigfoot beating its chest possibly would do. As far as a society, no, if they were a threat to us, they would have killed us all a long time ago.
Let's go to the phones. John in Kentucky, east of the Rockies, to get us started. Hey, John, welcome.
Hey, George, president of the Airways.
You
always.
Got it. Thank you.
John, I seen a reptilian in my house one time. Now, this is a couple years back when I was running a marathon, so I was very alert and coherent, but I'm also spiritual. I seen this thing as I woke up from the nap. It was looking at me from the hallway. So I got up, no fear, took after it, went into another room and hid behind the door, and I went up to it. And as I was looking at it, I observed it. Now, this thing was broad and muscular, but it had a hoodie on. But I knew it was a reptilian-type creature because of its facial structure. And it was like a buffer zone. I was able to look at it, but I couldn't touch it to defile myself from, I guess, from where I was spiritual and still am. And when I was looking at it, I said, I rebuke you in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ through his holy stripes and through his holy blood. And he disappeared. Now, these creatures, they are from beneath and they are below, for Satan is a liar and a deceiver. But I think some of these aliens, not all of them, I think some of them could be, you know, of God. But I think these creatures are from below, as you say, in the earth, from Satan is a liar. And they are unclean and dark spirits. They're not demons. Demon is a man-made word. They're devils, unclean and dark spirits. But that's all I got to say. I think they're from beneath, not from above. And, well, God bless you, George. Thank
all right.
you, guys.
Thank you. Your thoughts, John Rhodes.
Well, you know, John makes a great point. I mean, a lot of us are going to feel that these are fallen angels. And if they weren't so, they would be on the surface of the earth. Obviously, according to the Jewish and the Christian religions, at one time, Garden of Eden was occupied by all the animals, and all the animals were good. And the Adam and Eve were speaking to this serpent. And then something went wrong. The serpent said, hey, I want you to kind of take this imbibe in this fruit, and your eyes will be awakened, and you'll see that, you know, you're not just an ordinary man or woman, you're special, you know, as beings. And that caused a great deal of anxiety with whoever's controlling the big show called humans on Earth, and they went underground. And you have this idea of the endless tunnels in the Earth being like the hollow pit, or the endless pit of hell, and that humans and reptilians are supposed to remain separate from each other under God's command until he returns one day in the future. And until then, they're not supposed to interact. Well, we know at this point they have interacted, and with our leadership today, they currently interact. So what's the next thing that's going to happen? Well, somebody's going to come back and judge the show. It's going to be some higher superior power, whether you want to call it alien or God or spiritual, somebody's going to come along and say, enough is enough. And at that point, perhaps the conflict between reptile and man, as perceived spiritually, would be over, because eventually God says, learn to forgive and forgive those who hate you or have things against you. And that's to embrace true Christianity. And so, therefore, you know, in the end, we have to forgive even our enemies, even if they're another species, and all get along. And there's a lot of business on the back end of this, folks. Once we get over this fear thing, can you imagine the possibilities of trade?
Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California on the wild card line. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you very much. And, you know, God bless you, George, and your staff. The shows have been fantastic over the last few weeks. It's just interview after interview. And I also bless our audience. John, you are bringing a lot of very interesting information to the table. Thank you so much. I have a comment and then a question. Throughout history, there has been worldwide the legend of dragons. And whether it's Britain, Europe, the Middle East, India, Tibet, China, Southeast Asia, Japan, Polynesia, you see what I mean. It's like maybe up to 600 or 700 years ago, there were sightings of dragons worldwide, particularly in Europe. And you have legends like St. George and the Dragon, you know. And, you know, many of the knights were trained to go out and slay dragons. And I feel like where there's smoke, there's fire, that all these legends can't be fake, you know, can't be fake news, that maybe they represent something that happened 600 or 700 years ago or a couple thousand years ago in which mankind was interacting with another species, dragons, which when you think about it are a variant of reptilians. And so I was wondering if you would comment on that, if you would connect the dots between the sightings of dragons hundreds of years ago and today.
Well, you know, I really appreciate the question because it's valid. We're looking back in the beliefs of ancient people and then trying to correlate them in terms that we can understand today. I think there's enough out there on this planet. George and I love it when we tell people, hey, do you know that only like 15 to 20% of all life on Earth has ever been discovered and written down about and photographed and cataloged? Can you imagine what that leaves open for us to encounter in the future? And saying that, I think it's really important that we realize that these legends, such as the dragon and I'll say the mountain gorilla of Africa, which was also considered just a myth and a legend, and a story that crazy drunk people tell, in fact, have elements of truth rooted in their origins. And it's entirely possible that a large winged creature that had scales or short feathers could have been like a pterodactyl, a relationship to it, could have found some sort of ecological niche in caverns in which it survived as a small group, and then on occasion come out to the surface to fly around. That's entirely possible because, you know, from what I've studied over the years, the impossible is possible at times. And another way to look at this is that you have to look at it from a spiritual point of view in which, you know, how we can all entertain a God and we can all entertain a devil. In other words, the ability for those qualities of our character to come out in life are equally as strong as it's a matter of which one do we give into. Do you give into the demon and go to drink because your internal psychiatry is in chaos? Do you go into battle and take pity upon the child, or do you slay it by sword just because you're instructed to? And at that time, are you handling the dragon inside you, or have you become the dragon? And a lot of this symbolism, like George slaying the dragon, I believe has to do with two things. The Western influence on its contact with the Far East, given the idea of Constantinople being a trading capital with the Far East at the times, and also what are elements of human imagination coming into play in which they're actually feeling that something is there when it's actually something being internalized. It, again, without actually being there, it's hard to say. But we can rely on one fact. There have been way too many reports to
describe similar things, for it to be just aberrations of some sort of social contact or storytelling.
Next up, Eric, truck driving in Indiana. Welcome to the program, Eric.
George.
Hey there.
Yeah, this is Eric, the Mind Control Guy. How's everybody doing tonight?
You're up late tonight.
Yeah, I got a late start. The reefer unit on my engine was running hot, so I had to wait for it to cool down. Anyway, what I had to say is the caller before was talking about dragons. Well, the thing is, George, the word dinosaur wasn't invented until 1841 by a fella by the name of Owen, prior to which all those critters were called dragons. And all these cultures all over the world, maybe back in those days that didn't have contact with each other, they all got these images of dragons in the Orient, in Europe, all over the world, all these images of people slaying dragons, which today we call dinosaurs. So I'm thinking the myth that dinosaurs died out millions of years ago was an absolute fairy tale, because there were dinosaurs that were still around. In fact, in the earlier part of the last century, it was either in the encyclopedia or the dictionary, it had the definition of dragon, and it said very rare yet still living animal. Let's see what you just had to say about
that. Well, you know, it's also correlating this, what you just said. It's interesting to note that dragon and the bird, because we know, scientists say nowadays that, hey, birds evolved from the early dinosaurs, but yet the dinosaurs were thought of being more reptilian or proto-mammalian, but more on the reptilian side. And we look at mammals or birds as being mammals. So this fusion between the bird, which is an ancient symbol of peace and love and everything the Western powers tried to promote in religion, versus the serpent, which was an Eastern symbolism of religious philosophy. And then you have the union between the two, a winged serpent. And you've seen the feathered serpent symbols also on some of the labels of reptilian humanoids that have been reported. So there's some sort, I think even they see a relationship to that. So it's a great, great point. I agree with you totally. I think some of these bones were dug up, and then people dug up and people said, ah, it must have been a dragon. Look, it's right here. Look how ferocious and big it was. That, in those days, that would have made me, they would have convinced me.
John's website is called Reptoids.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. You're also on Facebook, John, aren't you?
Yes, I have a Facebook page that's active, although it's kind of strange. I'll do a television appearance like this, and I'll probably get six or seven people sometimes reach out on Facebook, and I'm like, you know, I know there's got to be more people reaching out for me. I'm just not getting it. So I reached almost 4,500 people being friends, and then what I did is I went and dumped my entire list. And in doing
so,
even though my list was empty and it only showed my profile.
They locked you out.
At the top, it said, you have 20 followers still.
John, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about the life of comedian and actor Tim Conway with his daughter Kelly Conway. Her book is called My Dad's Funnier Than Your Dad. I'm looking forward to that. And then later on, we're going to be talking about more of the Men in Black and Strange Things with Alan Greenfield on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, John Rhodes with us in your final calls as well. John, would you describe what these reptoids, reptilians look like?
They are beings that are 6 to 7 feet or 7.5 feet in height. They have a humanoid form. Their head is got a back-sloping skull. They have slits for nose. They have large almond-shaped eyes with vertical-shaped pupils, small slits for the ears. They have a lipless mouth. Their chest is large and broad. Their arms are like a linebackers. And they have three fingers with an opposable thumb with claws. Their legs are very muscular. Most of the times they're seen without a tail. There have been some that have been seen with a tail. And
do they look like walking alligators?
No, they look more humanoid than that. it's not as reptilian looking as you might think.
Okay.
Even around their face and stuff, they have around their eyes and their nose, they have very, very fine scales like a snake. So they're very, very flexible. So it's other than them being reptilian, and the fact that they have the large claws, you don't have this kind of a stony or studded skin or anything like that resembling crocodiles or alligators.
But you're saying they're more from this planet as opposed to ETs, right?
Yes, there's a possibility they could have been evolved here and left the planet a long time ago and may be coming back. And if we're looking at some sort of an extraterrestrial force arriving, we can't just jump to the conclusions that they're from off planet. They might present themselves as travelers who originated from Earth a long time ago.
What would you say of everything you've investigated is the strangest thing that you've stumbled across?
The strangest
thing. Strangest thing in your career.
I would have to say the reptilian humanoids. I just wasn't logically, I find it hard to accept. You know, I told you once that I had some sort of a vision or encounter, and I can't even believe my own because I studied the subject for so long that I'm too,
right,
you know, susceptible to it. I can't believe my own account. Let's put it that way. I think that's strange to me. You know, it even feels odd that I should study it, but still be kind of like questioning the fact that I actually even saw something. You know, it's almost too unbelievable, even though I know it's real.
All right, let's go to final calls. Let's go to John, truck driving in Buffalo, New York. Welcome to the show. Hey, John, welcome.
Hey, George, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, my friend. Go ahead.
I was wondering if your guest could just explain a little bit more about the research he did on the cattle mutilations that you did in the first segment there. Were these the same mutilations that Linda Moulton Howe investigated, where ranchers found no blood or tire tracks near the carcass, and tongues and eyes were removed, and organs almost thought to be done with a precision laser?
And you were just
talking about one of the craziest things you've ever discovered, and I've been listening for 15 years, and this is by far one of the strangest things I've ever heard of. I'll listen off the air. Thanks, guys.
Okay, John. Go ahead, John.
I don't know if it's specifically the case that Linda Moulton Howe, who's the queen of mutilations and investigating it, had done. All I can tell you is the ones that I have seen up close and personal. I'll look at a carcass. It'll be sitting there for 6 weeks. No animals have touched it, no predators, nothing. Not even birds will stand on the carcass for long, but two weeks previous, a cow died naturally in a pasture nearby, and it's stripped to the bones. Okay, so these are odd things. When I took the skin samples and put them under a microscope, you can see that some sort of a pulse laser was used because you could see the burnt nodules every so often in the line of the cut. Also, the hairs from the cow were actually curled inwards as if a heat was applied like a curling iron, and the tips of the hair glued to the underside. So you can tell it happened when the fat was still fresh and hot. So too many of these things have definitely got a serious sign of science investigation going on. And furthermore, almost everything that's taken from these cows is used to determine all the sticky substance, all the mucuses from their jowls, their ears even have cerumen in it. The earwax collects parasites. The mucus collects parasites. They measure what's coming in versus what's leaving out the back end. They compare it, and then they've got some sort of an idea of what it's doing to the food chain down line.
Let's go to Bobby in Muskogee, Oklahoma. Hey, Bobby, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, George. My question, I've got two of them. The first one is about, I think you were saying you have to be in the southern hemisphere, if I was, say, to get a telescope and try to look for Nibiru. Like you were saying something about in Peru or Brazil or somewhere, that, like, what would be the azimuth, you know, like the magnetic azimuth and the elevation, like if I was to try to look at it? And the other question is, I heard that like some of the earthquakes and some of the rumblings under the ground is actually like a war that was going on between aliens and the military and some of these bases or something like they had discovered, like the ant people or, like, you know, got into their territory underground and there was a war broke out or something. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, you take that one first, John. The first question was for Marshall Masters, who believes that looking for Nibiru would be better in the Southern Hemisphere, but go ahead with his other question.
You'll have to remind me of the first question. Back up over here. Can you do that?
That was for Marshall. That wasn't for you.
Oh, okay. In regards to, remind me again, pull me center a little bit here.
Well, and we've just let him go. The other one had to do with the reptoids and what they are.
A battle underneath the planet. Oh, yeah, it's entirely possible. Even nuclear explosions can show up as minor earthquakes that get dismissed because things of that Richter scale happen all the time. And the planet vibrates with these kind of explosions, and some of them are unnatural. And it's entirely possible that they're having conflicts underground. I don't know. We don't see any indications on the surface, but I believe that our rulers on this planet could actually hide a war on Earth if it's happening underground. They would do their best to hide it from us.
Are you familiar with the work of Marshall Masters and the Planet X? That's what his question basically was.
No, I'm unfamiliar with it, okay. So I wouldn't be able to make an educated comment.
He believes it's kind of hidden behind the sun, but he thinks the best way to see it is when you're in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to advise him.
Okay.
And, you know, just before we go to the next call, in closing out that comment before we went to commercial about the Facebook account being closed, even though I had zero.
Who closed it? You did?
I dumped my entire friends list of about 4,500 people because I was getting marginalized. I was not getting, it's insane. I wasn't getting any contacts or anybody connecting with me. And then what I did is I dumped the entire list. And when I looked back on, I looked at my friends list, it showed my face, and then above it, it said I had 20 friends, but their profiles could not be observed.
Strange.
Okay, so who's got hidden profiles?
Strange. Nobody.
Right. So this is how Facebook and the government marginalize people. You know, I've been to Hollywood. I've been to the ivory towers in Hollywood with big network producers and their heads of talent and everything, told a TV show was going to be made and never heard a telephone call from them since. So when you know me, I'm not going to write a book about fanciful subjects and go off kilter just to make a buck. I'm going to wait until I get the real research to do something.
That's right.
And people like myself are marginalized as much as anybody else is in society. Now that the government's coming forward to say that UFOs are real, we should start a Me Too movement, you know, because we've been going through years of harassment.
First-time caller, Matt. Welcome to the program, Red Bluff, California. Go ahead, Matt.
Hi, George. Hi, John. Hey, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I was just calling in about what your guest was talking about on the reptoids and the underground bases.
Sure.
I have a story my buddy told me about a year ago, and it takes place up in the Sierra Nevada mountains. And he was visiting his grandma, and him and his cousin were hiking up this trail behind his grandma's house up this mountain. And he said he got up by these caves, and all of a sudden, like a reptilian creature that was pale and had like large black eyes come out of this cave and tried to drag him into it. And he kicked away from the creature. And he was able to get away, and him and his cousin ran down the hill. But while they were running down the hill, there was other ones that were popping out behind the trees. And he said he grabbed one of these things and was able to rip it by the eye. And
Wow. It
started screaming and yelling. And that's kind of – it was a crazy story. But he was – when he told me the story, he was shaking. And he was literally – you know, he's like crying. And it was just a real crazy story, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of these stories, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, it sounds to me like, you know, what we're dealing with are we're dealing just like with humans. Some of them are flying spaceships, yet some of them are still primitive and living in the forest. And if you look at one versus the other, you would think they had nothing to do with each other, or one kind of cancels out the other. But in the case of these alien beings, when we're talking about reptilian creatures, we might have some that are more – that are closer to the surface of the Earth, that have been living in a harsh environment, who – have been living separately that are more animal-like than they are sentient beings. So when they react like that, or they attack a car, just like a dog would attack, run alongside a car or something like that, things that they think might hurt them in the night, they're going to react like that, being more primitive. So those kind of accounts, I believe, have some sort of reality to them. Not all, but some of them do.
You've got a DVD called Whatever Happened to Cow Number 62. What is that?
Well, that was the cow's number that was in the 2006 cattle mutilation up in Valier, Montana.
Okay.
That was being studied. And, you know, one of the things that all of this work has pointed out to me is that if you get Google Maps and the downloadable version, you can create your own place marks and stuff, and you can draw lines from one UFO sighting to another. A long time ago, before we had computers, that's what we used to do, is put maps on the wall and pins and strings, and we would detail the flight paths and then see where they crossed over, and then be able to correlate that with known Air Force bases or military bases and things like that. But Google Maps is really an incredible tool. It's highly accurate, and historically, it has images through the years, so you can look at one point of view of a piece of ground and then look to see what's changed from year to year. And actually, I've trolled the North Korean DMZ looking for underground bases by doing just that, looking for fields that suddenly had a lot of construction and everything seems to be plowed over and normal again. And doing that, rolling up and down the TMZ, because, you know, North Korea has a large, sophisticated network of underground bases. With runways jetting right outside of mountains and stuff. They're not a backward country. And, you know, I'm sure being a public persona, you know, with me doing this kind of thing, that somebody's watching my signals, even watching me research and try and look for these things, because they're valid potential enemy targets.
Let's go to Lacey in Louisiana. Go ahead, Lace. We'll get you in here real fast.
Hi.
Hi there.
I wanted to ask, your guest actually touched on it a little bit when you asked him what they looked like. I was going to ask more about something that we saw when we built a house in a remote area of Louisiana, and it was late one night after we first moved into the house. I was at the window looking out, and it was something that had it looked like it was on all fours, but then when I saw it, it stood up on just hind legs, and it had really protruding knees, almost like comparable to praying mantis-type knees, how far forward they went when it would squat, and it kind of looked kind of scaly, but it did open its mouth when it was close to the window, and I could see that it had sharp teeth, and I put it out of my mind. And then about 20 years later, my sons described seeing almost something the exact same when they were visiting that area at our pond.
Are they all over the place, John Rhodes?
I believe they are in remote areas. In rural areas, you get more, you know, people reporting these than you do in cities or towns. And, you know, again, when you're talking about a really wooded area, somewhere where animals roam freely, and then they get towards the outskirts of where people are living, you're going to have these sightings, of which they come up to windows. I've heard the same thing with the Bigfoot, where somebody on the second floor has actually seen the top of the head of Bigfoot walk past.
Wow.
In Montana. So, I think sooner or later we're going to find something. It's going to be a body, or it's going to be, I don't know if it'll be a living, actual open contact type thing, but sooner or later we're going to find something that's gonna really kind of be shocking.
And then maybe science will go crazy. John, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program. John Rhodes, his website, reptoids.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.